Let us now talk to Bruce Williamson from the campaign group Rail Futures to find out what's going on. Bruce, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Morning, Mike. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has been a while. I mean, I don't know. I suppose because nobody's been on the train for such a long time. We haven't really talked about them. But, I mean, Simon Calder, you know, from The Independent, has always assured me that, don't worry, we're still spending loads of money subsidising them, even though nobody's on them.
Yeah.
About £1 million an hour, he says.
I mean, it is a lot of money. You know, it is an expensive business to run a railway when it's sort of, you know, not being used very much. But I think this is a case of holding our nerve, because if we don't do this, then we basically scrap railways altogether, and that would be a disaster for the country.
Well, do you know what's funny is that since, I mean, I can't remember the last time you and I spoke, but I mean, since I would say about sort of June, July of last year, when things started to kind of open up a bit after the first initial lockdown, the roads were incredibly busy, because clearly people were taking the advice that politicians were giving them, which was not to travel on public transport.
Yeah, I mean, road transport is pretty much back to normal, and it's understandable because, you know, because of the COVID thing, you want to separate yourself from other travellers. Your car is a nice little private enclosed space,
yes.
and sadly, a train carriage isn't. So, you know, we in the rail campaigning group industry, as it were, along with the rail industry, found ourselves in the very bizarre position of saying don't travel by train, but hopefully, you know, we're reaching the point where we can change that advice and
yes.
say, yeah, get back on the rails.
Well, certainly now that things are kind of opening up, if you can go and sit in a pub inside as of next Monday, I mean, I've certainly been on tube trains now that are pretty busy. I mean, they're not quite back to the, you know, press your face up against the glass busy, but they're, you know, standing room only. People aren't sitting on sort of alternate seats anymore. There's quite a lot of people using the underground, and I'm told by other people who use the overground trains coming into London from places like, you know, Kent and Berkshire and stuff, that it is getting busier.
Yeah, undoubtedly, and I mean, I've still, you know, we mustn't forget that the coronavirus is still out there, and I wouldn't particularly like to be on a tube train these days.
Well, yeah, but if you've had a vaccine, and so most of the other people have had a vaccine, that's supposed to be what makes a difference, and that's why I don't
exactly
quite understand why people would be reticent, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the vaccine rollout is the thing that's enabling us to get back to normal. And I've had my first jab, waiting for my second one in a month's time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, things are returning to normal. And clearly that's reflected in passenger use on the railways in general.
Yes. So what's happening with these particular trains being withdrawn? And how many are withdrawn, and how's it affecting the service?
Well, we're talking several fleets of trains that operate intercity high-speed rail between the West Country and London and, as you said, LNER. So that's all up the East Coast. These are these super-duper new Hitachi, or relatively new Hitachi 800 series trains, which have been operating for about, I don't know, a year or two now.
And what's wrong with them?
What's wrong with them is a crack has developed on a sort of bracket on the chassis. And this bracket holds in place a thing called a yaw damper. The yaw damper is a sort of shock absorber that stops the train hunting from left to right. So it sort of stops it banging from one rail to the other, to the other, to the other, and makes the train go in a nice straight line, smoothly between the rails.
Right.
So there's this crack, and clearly that's a fault. It is a design error. Hitachi, you know, are at fault here. But I mean, inevitably with, you know, any new train, any new plane, any new car, any new coach, that these problems do arise. It's sort of inevitable. You know, Hitachi, obviously they're very experienced in rail. They manufacture the trains on the Japanese bullet trains.
Yes.
So they, you know, they have a lot of expertise, but, you
well,
know,
that's why I was quite surprised. I mean, it's the sort of thing you expect, from the sort of manufacturing arm of Britain in the 1970s that, you know, we've made a train, it doesn't work. Well, but, you know, you'd think with Japanese design and all of that.
Yeah.
I'm told these are put together here though, is that right?
That's right. They're assembled in Newton Aycliffe, up in the northeast.
Right.
So they're sort of British assembled. I mean, the very first ones were actually made in Japan, and then later on they were assembled in the UK, with a lot of Japanese components and a lot of Japanese technology. I mean, it just goes to show that no one's perfect, really, isn't it? You know, despite that sort of supposed Japanese excellence.
Yes.
You know, it isn't perfect.
And how long will it be before they've checked them all and returned them to use, or will they have to be sort of be disassembled or whatever?
Well,
I think
we're looking at a kind of a two-stage process. Yeah, I mean, so what they're doing right now is inspecting them to see, you know, they found some cracks on some of them, so they've got to inspect the whole fleet and take the whole fleet out of action while those inspections happen. when they've inspected them, they'll gradually allow them back into service. And I imagine by the end of the week, we'll see many of them operating, and they will be regularly inspected to see whether these cracks appear again. Mm. And then in the meantime, they'll be planning a sort of recall and refit to correct this fault, which will take some time. I really don't know what the time scale is, but let's suppose they design a new bracket and test it, and you know, then they've got to gradually weld them into the trains. Mm. One by one. But actually, bizarrely, the timing is actually quite fortuitous in a way, because obviously, as you know, generally speaking, the train operating companies are running a reduced service, which means that they have more spare trains than they normally would. Yeah. So taking a few trains out of service isn't going to affect it as much as it would do under normal circumstances.
No, of course. And so, I mean, as far as the industry is concerned, how does it see the rest of this year going? I mean, does it ever see a return? Because there's two things really affecting the train services. One, obviously, people's, you know, unwillingness to perhaps travel on public transport, but also the large number of people who may end up now not actually going to work 5 days a week in an office because they've decided, or their company's decided, that they can get away with doing 2 days a week or 3 days a week.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that things will never be quite the same again. You and I and people in the industry can't exactly predict the future, but my personal gut feeling is pretty optimistic. I think for the most part, people will be returning to the trains. And, you know, we need to sort of put this in the context of the bigger picture, where over the last 20 years, passenger numbers have doubled on the railways. We've got more people traveling by travel under normal circumstances. Let's say a year and a half ago, we had more people traveling on the trains generally than ever, even before the Beeching Act, you know, even before the glory days of the railway. So, you know, the future is pretty bright for the railways. We've got a growing, whatever that trend is that's forcing passenger numbers up and up and up over the years, I think that isn't going to go away. Mm. Clearly, you're right, some people will be working from home who didn't before, but I think, you know, still, it's pretty optimistic for the railways.
And what about tourism? Because that presumably has a big effect on the train numbers as well. And I'm seeing today that Sadiq Khan, the London mayor, having just been re-elected, is launching some kind of massive tourism campaign to try and make London the destination of choice for many, many people to go on holiday, presumably from the rest of the country rather than from outside of the country. So that may give them a bit of a boost.
Well, indeed, you know, leisure travel is important for the railways too. And I think, I'm hoping with this sort of feel-good factor that comes back with the end of the COVID crisis and people going back to the pubs and so on, and people are desperate to just get away anywhere. So I think, you know, the railways can play a part in that, and hopefully, you know, there's a campaign, I think, that the rail industry needs to do to attract people back to rail and remind them that the railways are there and a good way to go on a short break and enjoy some leisure on the train.
Yes. How about this for a text that I've got just before we go? Maybe the cracks in the Hitachi brackets have appeared because the rails are in such bad shape and they've been overworked, but I can't imagine that would be the case. Or are the rails in a very bad way?
Well, I've heard a similar sort of suggestion that basically the Brunel's British railways are slightly bendier and twistier than the high speed lines that these trains were originally designed for. Because obviously when you build a new railway, you can build it nice and straight. When back in the 19th century, you could build it a bit more bendy because the trains were going a bit slower.
Yes, I suppose so. Slightly depressing to know that Brunel's railway lines are still in place though.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, I'm being unfair to Brunel, actually. He did have a lot of vision and foresight, and the Great Western Railway is a beautiful work of engineering, but there are other lines that certainly are more twisty and bendy than that. And, so because the lines are twistier and bendier, that yaw damper I was talking about, the left-right shock absorber, has to do quite a lot more work.
Mm, interesting. All right, well, good to talk to you again, Bruce. I'm sure we'll see you soon. Bruce Williamson from Campaign Group Rail Future.